To the Chinese, today's date marks the official start of the Cultural Revolution, more than a half century ago. In 1966, the government of Mao Zedong issued a document to the Chinese people known as the May 16th Notification, a summary of what would become the ideological justification for the peasant revolution that would last for years and claim millions of lives. The Cultural Revolution is not well known in the West, but it is the defining event of the generations reaching middle age in prosperous China and has echoes in the coming of age of young people as well. We're going to tell you a story now that's very chilling from Hunan Province, less than 200 miles from Mao's hometown, where more than 4,500 people in Daoxian County, many of them children and the elderly, were killed in the fall of 1967. They were killed by each other, friends and neighbors who feared spies and communist backsliders among them. The reason we know anything about Daoxian is because of a brave Chinese journalist by the name of Tan Hecheng, who painstakingly reconstructed what happened for a magazine. And the story he found through voices of residents who agreed to speak was suppressed by that magazine. Tan was eventually able to publish a book of his accounts, banned in China. It was published in Hong Kong and is available in the United States. That book, which is an astonishing contribution to the literature of human rights and their denial, is called The Killing Wind, A Chinese County's Descent into Madness During the Cultural Revolution. And Beijing-based journalist and author Ian Johnson spoke to Tan about his reporting.
The whole issue of memory coming back up to the surface, suppressed facts of the past, that's something that's really intrigued me. So when I heard about this work, I wanted to get in touch with him.
He's not only uncovering something that is of great political significance, but it seems that so he goes at this massacre as a psychological mission, that it really says something about the 20th century, that the Chinese would do this to themselves.
Yeah, I think this is something that he found shocking, a lot of people find shocking, that it was really done to themselves. It was maybe the culmination of almost a century of intense doubt about Chinese culture, Chinese civilization, this feeling that our civilization isn't worth anything. And Mao was the epitome, the culmination of all that. And this violence, this overlay or underlay of violence just came to the fore in the Cultural Revolution. But it started earlier, this dehumanizing people, saying that these people are not really human. And that's, of course, what makes genocide possible. When you convince one group of people that another group of people are no longer human and that it's okay to kill them.
He sets you in this town and you get the feeling of being there. Describe from the point of view of what this book tries to achieve of what it must have been like to have been a person in this town.
Well, one thing that really struck me was when you go there now, of course, there are highways, not to mention the internet and all that. But back then when this happened, this was still really poor and rural. And he talks about this being like a plague. And he meant that it spreads when one carrier comes in contact with another person at a walking speed. So somebody had to come from the county seat to a village and instruct the local cadres, the local officials, you've got to kill these people. And it spread out, it radiated out like that from the center of power in the county out to the villages as party officials walked from one village to another saying, here are the orders, you've got to kill. And often people in the local villages didn't want to kill these people because they were mostly relatives of maybe not immediate relatives but distant relatives. But they said, no, this is your order. You have to kill these people. They are no longer human. They're no longer wanted. They're enemies of the state. We've got to get rid of them once and for all. One person whose story really stuck with me and stuck with Mr. Tan also was Zhou Chun. She had been living in a small town, a village. Her stepfather had been a police officer in the previous regime under the Nationalist Party, and that was enough to get her labeled as an undesirable. So it wasn't anything she had done personally. It was just her stepfather, and he had just been a police officer. She and her husband were rounded up and taken away. And as they were being taken away, the local officials said, don't they have children? They got their three children and herded them all along on almost like a death march because at this point these people had been mistreated for weeks and weeks. And they got to these large limestone pits where a lot of the people were killed. And they were just pushed into these pits. They landed on top of other people, and a lot of the people had broken bones and so on. It took them days to die in this pit. And eventually she was rescued, but she had to watch her children die in front of her, her husband die. And she didn't want to live, of course, afterwards, but she did. And she told us her story. We went and met her, in fact.
Did anyone have a mission, a sense of what we're doing here? Is it make Mao happy? Is it find a utopia? Is it survive?
These people who did a lot of the killing, they were quite young. They were in their 20s, and they had grown up in the Mao era, and they believed that everything Mao said was right. They were the people who had been educated in the Mao time. They may have been born slightly before the communists took over in 1949, but basically they were formed in the Mao years. They believed that Mao was essentially a god. And when he said that there are counter-revolutionary forces who are trying to destroy the revolution, they decided we have to take action. And so they went and decided we have to kill these people. And then, of course, the question is, well, if you kill Mr. X, what about his sons and daughters? Well, they're going to want revenge, so we better kill them also. And what about his brothers and sisters? Better kill them also. So that's why the killing started with just a small group of people and increased. This was something that Tan said over and over again, which struck him. When he finally had this moment, this aha moment when he was looking at this, he said to them, was there one person who had agitated against Mao? Was just one person who was trying to start some kind of counter-revolution that could perhaps have justified this? And they said in all of our investigation, and this was a state investigation in the 1980s, they couldn't find one person who had actually done anything. They were just lumped into this group and then killed. And that, I thought, was the most shocking. And for him, this was this moment when he really lost faith in the state and their whole version of history.
Today, do the people of China view the Cultural Revolution as something to just forget completely about, or do they view it as something that could sweep over the country again?
Some people are very nostalgic toward it. They think this was a period of radical egalitarianism. Nowadays, China is one of the most unequal societies in the world. So this period back then was seen as a time when at least we were all equal. And Mao maybe made some mistakes, but he attacked the privileged fat cats in government, the bureaucrats, all the people now who are really corrupt and who lord it over people nowadays. So some people think the Cultural Revolution wasn't bad. And then there are other people like, say, Mr. Tan and people who maybe have a broader view who think the Cultural Revolution won't repeat itself exactly. But this underlay of violence in society is still a problem, that society hasn't found self-correcting mechanisms where problems can be worked out in a peaceful manner. And I think that that's something that a lot of Chinese worry about.
Ian Johnson, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ian Johnson is a Beijing-based journalist who spoke to Tan Hicheng about his book, The Killing Wind. Johnson is also an author, most recently, of The Souls of China, The Return of Religion After Mao.